Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. At Right Choice Services, we develop individualized programs to help clients find that book inside of them they have always wanted to write. I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the writing they engage in as a part of their work. The producer for Right Here, Right Now is Kevin Finn. Now, we've just passed over Thanksgiving, even though this show is airing on December the 25th. But I got to ask, how was dinner in the country with your buddy at that house that you wouldn't tell us where it was?
It was pretty good. I actually had Thanksgiving with my girlfriend instead because my buddy's grandfather went into the hospital, unfortunately.
Oh,
so
my.
So Thanksgiving was still good, but it wasn't as good. My girlfriend was mad at me at first because I wouldn't come to her Thanksgiving, and I was like, I'm not passing up this spread. It's the best spread I've ever had. And then after Thanksgiving, she was like, mine was better, wasn't it? I was like, no.
Ooh, man, you're living dangerously. Okay, and we've got it on tape forever, don't
That's
we?
That's right, we do.
Okay. Yeah, it'll be there forever.
Yeah, and I do have here that we are recording this show on the Tuesday following Thanksgiving for broadcast during our usual time slot on Christmas, which falls on Tuesday this year. So we're going to have a mixture of Thanksgiving and Christmas holiday reflections. Joining me in the studio are Vanessa Lowry and Stone Payton. Vanessa is my permanent guest host, a very much an important part of the value and success of Right Here, Right Now. And Stone was our original producer and the original co-host of Right Here, Right Now. But he had to give up duties because he's just so busy with Business Radio X. And as I used to say, Stone is a vital cog. He's even become more vital-er cog. And Stone invests a lot of his time in helping the network grow. It's good to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's fun to be on this side of the mic.
It kind of feels like old home week with it everybody does. Here in the studio together.
It does. It does. The last time we all three were together was back in April when we did the anniversary show.
I remember that.
Yeah. And that seems like it was just a couple days ago.
It does.
It's hard to believe that it's already the holidays.
Yeah. Well, what we're going to do today is you know, many folks think about writing memoirs. In fact, I was at a job seekers program last night talking about resumes, and a lady came up to me and said, do you know anything about writing memoirs? And I said, oh, maybe a little. And, you know, generating a family history. And I think the holiday season, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, you know, when families gather, that triggers more thoughts about saving and sharing memories by writing them down. I'm trusting that Vanessa and Stone and even Kevin, that we're all going to share memories and stories and events from our lives, recollections of family gatherings. And for us, it'll be a journey down memory lane. My hope is for our listeners that you'll see how you can generate memories as well that could serve as the foundation for a book for your families. So let's begin with a simple yet daunting challenge. How about the best memory that you can call up around Christmas?
Well, you know what? When I was growing up, we always had big family get-togethers at Christmas time, and it was my dad was one of a family of 10 siblings.
Oh
so
my.
There were, and he was the next to the youngest. And so there were lots and lots of cousins and lots of aunts and uncles. And then my mom was from a family of three. And so we lived very close to her siblings and her mom. And so there were always a lot of family around. But it was cool because I remember it was probably when I was in elementary school. It became overwhelming to try to buy Christmas gifts for all the extended family. And so what my mom and dad decided to do was, instead of buying Christmas gifts for everyone, they decided to have a big open house at our house on Christmas Day. And so we would always, you know, get up and do our own small family thing. And then around lunchtime, everybody could come in and out for, you know, 5 or 6 hours. Mm-hmm. And so we just had lots of food and people could come in and out. And it was a time for, you know, for you to be able to reconnect with cousins that you maybe only saw a couple of times a year, as well as people that had come in from out of town to be able to come and connect with everybody at one place, which I know that's one of the things that's hard when you live somewhere else is to be able to see everybody when you're home. So it was a great way to for everyone to get to connect together at one time. And they did that for years, even after I was in Atlanta. They continued that tradition of having big family get-togethers on Christmas Day.
Oh, I like that.
So for me, Christmas 1989 in South Florida, Holly, my wife, she is the youngest of five daughters. And at that time, the Christmas house was Aunt Mary's, and they were living in South Florida. Holly and I were married in front of all of that family right after all the presents had been opened.
Oh, wow.
And everyone except the preacher, Holly, and I were in their pajamas. And to this day, they all think it's the best wedding they've ever been to.
Wow.
And they didn't know that this was happening?
The only people that knew were the preacher, Mary, me, and Holly. And,
wow. Oh, that's amazing. How'd you pull that off?
These Mackinsons, they are planners. And so, but it was a lot of fun. And I mean, all the nephews that were five or six at the time are now grown and getting out of college. That's a memory that they all hold, is going to Uncle Stone and Aunt Holly's wedding in their pajamas.
And you have no excuse for forgetting the anniversary, do you?
Not at all.
That makes it easy. That was smart.
Yeah. Well, from our youngest member here, Kevin, what do you got going?
Every Christmas, I would have Christmas Eve would be with my mom's family. Uh-huh. And we would do that. I'd get a bunch of gifts, and I always planned it out perfectly. But then I'd go to my dad's house, and I would go to sleep and do the whole Santa Claus thing. Well, my dad, I remember asking him when I was younger, I was like, how does Santa Claus get to all the houses? It doesn't make any sense. So he made up this whole story about me having my own personal elf named Elvin. And I remember one Christmas, I was getting there, and all I wanted was it was a Power Ranger. It was a Green Ranger Zoid, kind of like giant dinosaur thing. And I remember opening all my gifts and waiting for it. And I was like, all I wanted was like the hottest gift. And I didn't realize later that it was all sold out almost everywhere. Well, my dad had went and got it, but he hid it in his room. So I opened all my gifts and it wasn't there. I was so depressed. And then he went in his room and he's like, oh, Elvin. Oh, and I heard this whole commotion and he came out with the president. I remember that. It was really, really cool. Wow. And later, years later, I found out that he had to fight people to get this and it was sold out everywhere and he had gone around everywhere. So he was a great dad. So
that's what dads do, right, Stone?
That's right.
We go for the impossible.
So what about you, Dr. Tim? What's your best memory?
I feel like I'm going to rain on a happy parade, but this really is the best memory I have. The last time I saw my brother alive was at Christmas in 1972. And of course, at the time, we didn't know that. I was home from seminary for Christmas break, and Bub was living with us. He was 10 years my senior. And every night that I was home during that week of Christmas, he and I would sit and talk. Mom and Dad had gone to bed. Our sister was long ago married and out of the house. And so he and I would just sit and talk. And with the 10-year difference in our ages, we really hadn't done much of that because I was always a snot-nosed little kid brother. But now I was 22, 23, and he was 32. And what became significant is towards the end of the week, he started asking me questions about church and about faith and all that kind of stuff. Not that he wanted to get right with the Lord or anything. He was a staunch member of AA and went to it constantly, and that was where his faith was. But we had some really strong conversations, and he subsequently died of a heart attack in July of 73. So that turned out to be the last time I had seen him. And it was just amazing, all the information that he had given me that people really needed to know at the time of death. You know, do you think? And I had the answers.
Wow.
Just because we had those conversations. And it was really powerful. It was really powerful.
Well, and you know, you were in the introduction, you were talking about, you know, people writing some of their memories down. And I mentioned that we used to have these big family get-togethers on Christmas Day. And my dad passed away a couple of years ago, and my cousin Missy, who used to, her family lived in Florida, and they always came in for Christmas, and they would always come to our house on Christmas Day, and she's about 10 years younger than me, so I remember her as being a little kid, mm-hmm. you know, and she wrote this beautiful thing that she posted on our Care Pages page for my dad that was about my dad and talking about those memories of being at our house on Christmas Day and what a difference that made in her life of, you know, being able to play puzzles with him and being able to, you know, interact with all the family in one place. And I thought that was really beautiful for her to take the time to share that memory with us at a time that, you know, we're really going through a very sad time, but it was such a blessing to have that positive memory of all those years of, you know, Christmases together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, let's look at food. I know none of us really enjoy food. But why I raise that is, regardless of one's faith tradition. Food is always there. In the Jewish tradition, there is, you know, the Passover and the unleavened bread. And Christian tradition, we talk about the sacrament of communion. Kwanzaa has various foods for various days. It's there. And in a way, I think that in our own families, we imitate that or we replicate that. Stone, what are some foods that if the Peyton family is meeting, this food has to be there?
Well, there are a couple of very specific meals, particularly around Christmas time. For Christmas Eve, it's filet, green peas, and French fries. And that's across all the Mackinson families. And now it all happens at my house.
Will that be happening this year?
Oh, yeah. I've got...
What time?
We won't even notice you. We'll have 20 people staying with us for a week plus.
Oh, my.
And all of our meals are very well planned out. Everyone has a job, and it's all on the calendar, and all the meals are very well planned. But filet green peas and French fries on Christmas Eve. And then on the 27th, usually... or maybe it's the 26th, it depends on how the days fall. That's girls' shopping day. So the food for that day is hoagies, because the girls are all out shopping, getting all the great deals for, you know, the right after Christmas deals. Uh-huh. It's officially referred to as K-Mag Yo-Yo. Kiss my ass, gentlemen, you're on your own. All the girls go shopping. We have hoagies for lunch and hoagies waiting for them when they get back. When they get back, they're dragging, they're tired, they have their hoagie that they've ordered that we went out and gotten for them, and then they all go upstairs and they all get massages. We hire a masseuse and often a team of masseuses for all the
assistants.
Nice. Yeah, we definitely want to go to
his house. Yeah, we do.
Hoagies is a big thing at our place around Christmas.
I like that.
That's awesome.
Kevin?
Chinese dim sum. Christmas Day, my family always gets together. We go get Chinese dim sum. It's the only place open. Hong Kong Harbor over on Cheshire Bridge. And we all eat there. Then we go see a movie. And it's awesome. It's just... And it's cool because both my families come together. My dad's family and my mom both sit down together and do that. And that's really unique. I didn't appreciate it when I was a kid, but I appreciate it now.
Sure. Absolutely.
Well, and one of the things that our family did is we always had cookie-making parties. And it was sugar cookies that you decorated. Wow. And so some years we had lots and lots of people in with cousins and aunts and uncles. And then some years it was more our immediate family with, you know, with the folks that we were married to or that we were dating and that kind of thing. But I remember one year that it was primarily our immediate family with our spouses. And for some reason, my mom had baked all the cookies, and so everybody was busy doing things. And so my brother-in-law actually ended up, myself and my brother-in-law ended up decorating all the cookies. And so my mom decorated cakes for years, and so she had all these different, you know, colors, and she had all the different tips, and so it was really fun to decorate the cookies. But Philip and I decorated the cookies, and I have to say that some of them were not so politically correct. So we had to be careful about who we shared those cookies with. That if it went outside the family, we had to look through and make sure that it was really funny. The Santa Claus is with the hats on, and not, you know, not something else going on. So.
You know, when I listen to each one of you share, I get stories running through. And that's the fun of this, I think, is, I can remember. For me, a couple of things came up. You know, I was in ministry for forever. And then when I left ministry, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, which is, hey, this is vacation. I don't have anything to do. And one Sunday or one Christmas, Marta and I figured, we'll just go out for dinner on that day. Never having had that opportunity before, to discover that restaurants aren't open on Christmas except
Chinese places.
Chinese places and Waffle House. And so we went to Waffle House, and it was the greatest experience. I think we finally found one like 4 in the afternoon. And we knew that every other person that was in there with us was in there for the same reason. They didn't have anything else to do, and this was the only place open. So now we go there every Christmas Day. Now, there's a coworker Marta has who thinks that's just abominable. And she always invites us, and we said, no, Waffle House is cool. We're good with that. In fact, last year we were in Akron visiting Marta's mom and our son Joel, and there's a Waffle House in Akron. And so we kept the tradition intact. We were there at night.
Now, do you know that there's a Waffle House Museum in Avondale Estates?
Yes, I do. yes, I do.
Did you know Waffle House takes reservations on Valentine's Day and they get filled up?
Really?
Yes.
Oh, my.
So you can tell.
And do you know that from
it's
experience?
It's disturbing that you know that.
Wow.
How romantic.
Yeah. Stone, as a parent, what's one of your memories of Christmas as a parent?
As a parent, well, one of the things that we have, again, it's a tradition, is Santa Claus comes to our home on Christmas Eve, mm-hmm. and reads a story to all the little ones, and everyone really under about 35, but certainly all the kids, they get one present the evening before, mm-hmm. and Santa Claus brings them this present, and it's always Christmas pajamas.
Ah.
And so it's always fun. So this year, my college-age kid, her boyfriend is coming. And one of the things that has to happen between now and then is Santa Claus has got to go out and get the boyfriend pajamas so that they'll be available to
pink Barbie ones, right?
I was going to say, do you think Santa Claus is going to get him ones that he'll like to wear or ones that'll embarrass him to wear?
I think I'm going for the latter. But it's always fun as a parent. You're sitting by the fire. Santa Claus is reading the story, and then it's time to pull out the presents and to watch all the kids get together and get their pajamas. That's kind of cool.
That's awesome.
Wow, that's cool. I kind of have a tough time pulling up memories because my boys, much like Kevin, were raised in a divided house. The boy's mother, when I moved down to Georgia, still lived in Ohio and then on to Minnesota. And they often spent Christmas with their mother, which was fine because I was very busy on Christmas. But the one I do recall was I was between churches, and my mother paid for us to fly down to Florida to spend the week with her after Christmas, but we were flying on Christmas Day. And the boys were really concerned. They would have been 5 and 9, that where's Santa in this mix, in Ohio or in Florida? And I said, probably yes. So when they got up on Christmas morning, the gifts were there. And I'm kind of embarrassed to say this, but, you know, they opened them, they loved it, it was great. And I said, okay, now we have to hide them because we've got to get on the plane and we don't want people looking in the window, seeing gifts and breaking in. And they said, are you serious? You know, but I can still see their glee. They put them away. We got on the plane. We got down to my mom's place in Florida. And dang, didn't Santa Claus show up there too?
Up there too.
Wow. Yeah, and it was just a delight.
So then your boy said, "Dad, can we do this every year?"
No, thank places. God. But you know what's really neat is that our sons have become most amazing gift givers. We just celebrated Marta's birthday this past week, and the gifts that Joel and Sean came up with for her just blew me away. I'm embarrassed as the husband, you know, but they just have a neat way of capturing something, and they do that at Christmas as well. Well, I've been popping all the questions. How about somebody else lay a challenge out for us or give us a thought, random one?
So what's the best gift you've ever received?
Oh, I'll tell you. I go way back, and I always cling to this one. My brother, when I was a little kid, had the ability to always give me the gift at Christmas that was the one I wanted, whether I knew it or not. The one I remember most is he gave me barn boots.
Barn boots.
Well, that's what we called them up north. They're, you know, mucklucks, galoshes, you know, the not hip boots, but they're rubber so that you don't get wet and you can wade in creeks. We did not live on a farm. But behind our house was a ravine with a neat creek in it. Crick. Back home, it's a crick. And because Bub gave me those boots, I was able to go muck around in the creek. And it was just, I remember that. I just remember that. And then similarly, what turned out to be the last gift he ever gave me was he said, we're going shopping. I want to get you a really nice dress shirt. And he did, and it was just a gorgeous blue dress shirt. And I still have that. I still the boots are long gone, but I still have that. And those kinds of things are, they're just memories for me that I hold on to.
Well, you know, I have always been a lover of books, and it's interesting that now Dr. Tim, you know, lets me play on his show right here, right now, and we talk to people that are writing books or thinking about writing books, and we both work with folks that are writing books. But I've always loved books, and so a lot of my favorite Christmas memories are around books that I got as gifts, and you know how much I would look forward to that, and then just want to sit and read for, you know, a couple of days. So it was like, okay, nobody can talk to me now because I have to read my new book. So it was just such a great pleasure to get a book that you were really wanting to read, and then have, you know, usually had a little bit of downtime right after Christmas. So then I had some space to sit and read even as an adult. It's been really such a great pleasure to do that.
Yeah, my favorite gifts I always get from my friends or when people don't know what to get me are movie tickets, those prepaid movie tickets, because I love to go see movies. I remember I got like 14 of them when I was living in New York City. I was like, this is awesome. Now, for the next 2 weeks, I won't have to spend any money. All my entertainment's taken care of. I can save some money. I went in there, I handed them the movie ticket, and they said, can we have $3, please? And then I looked at the back of the movie ticket. They were good everywhere in the United States except for New York City, where you had to pay extra money to go see a movie. I was flabbergasted.
$52 or $42 it costs you to use all of those.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
What a gift.
I know.
Well, Stone, back at you with that question you posed.
It's got to be a tie between the rocket ship and the fort, both of which were built by my dad and all of his coaching staff with the aid of some beer at late at night, much of it being completed on Christmas Eve, I think. And in both cases, with the rocket ship, we got the spacesuits that, you know, back then you couldn't go to Walmart and buy a spacesuit. Somebody had handmade the spacesuit. They did find the space helmet. We had moon shoes, the whole bit, and this great big, huge rocket ship in the backyard.
Wow.
And then a different year, and I don't remember which came first, but they were spread out a couple of years apart. We had this whole Western fort built, and we got all the, you know, all the clothes and everything to go with it.
That's so cool.
Oh, my. I like that. I like that image.
I bet there's pictures somewhere. With
oh,
you.
Yeah, there are.
That's
absolutely.
Awesome.
I was skinny in some of these pictures.
I'll believe
that's how long ago it was.
And you didn't have gray hair either, did you?
Well, that makes me think one of the, I have a brother and a sister, and we're all very close in age, but my sister and I, 1 year for Christmas, we got these striped footy zip-up pajamas. And there's a picture of us both wearing our, and we were teenagers, so it's really a funny picture of, you know, she and I both in our striped footy pajamas that zipped up. They were nice and warm, though. It's cold in West Virginia, and they were warm.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, when you talk about the books, that triggered a memory of, in 1957, my parents, Santa Claus, one or the other, gave me a metal bookcase. It was two shelves, but it stood alone. And there were five books on that. One was on electricity, and one was about, I think, flying. And then there were three Tom Swift books. You know, most people know about the Hardy Boy series, but my parents decided I needed to know about Tom Swift. What I remember is I read all three of the Tom Swift books, really liked that. Never did read the electric book. I don't know what my parents were thinking. And I liked the one on space, but I still have that bookcase.
Wow.
And it's just fun to look at. That thing is old. Not as old as I am, but it's old. And it still holds books in our house. And it just, it's fun to have.
Do you guys have any good Christmas tree stories? Because I know getting the Christmas tree can be a great tradition in most families, and where you go get it, and what you do, and how you decorate it, and how much liquor you drink with your eggnog. So.
Well, you know what? I have a funny Christmas tree story. Our family, we always did the fake trees, which I know some people think is awful, but my mom for years was involved in the garden club, and she was a member of the garden club. And so they, different years, they took turns who was going to be in charge of the garden club tree for their event. And so the year that she was in charge, she decided that they would do a live tree and that they would decorate it with like popcorn and cranberries and that kind of stuff. And we had such a great time stringing all that stuff and putting it on the tree. The unfortunate thing was not everybody thought it was as good of an idea as we did. So they never asked her to do it again. But we thought it was a great tree.
When I was younger and the kids were younger, we would go up to LJ or wherever, somewhere north of here, a good half day's ride. We'd buy the apple fritters on the way.
Oh, nice.
And get some hot apple cider, and we would actually do the wagon ride thingy, and then Katie and Kelly would pick out the tree, and then you had to grab the saw and cut it and the whole bit. We don't do that anymore. Now we buy them from Pope High School Boosters Club. But but that was kind of a fun, it was a fun day trip to go do that.
Putting up the tree in my family when I was a kid was not the most pleasant of experiences. Because my dad, we'd go off, I don't know where, but he'd go somewhere and buy a tree and bring it home, and we would put it up. And my mother would always, it didn't matter, but she would always begin with, "Emery, I think you look for the crookedest tree you can find. You must feel sorry for it." And I knew we were off and running, you know. And then we'd get it decorated, and then it was time to put on the icicles, the tinsel.
Right.
Back then, it was aluminum kind of tinsel, and you put that on, and my dad would grab a few and just throw it on the tree, and Mom would say, "Emery, they don't look like icicles that way. You have to put them on one strand at a time." And I thought, oh no. So I would, but I, you know, we would laugh, but I just knew every year it was going to do that. Oh. A more positive kind of memory, though, is much like you, Stone, when we were still, so to speak, an intact family living in Ohio, we would go out and cut down a tree. There was a family in the church that had a tree farm, and we would go out, and Sean was 3 and Joel was 7, and they each had different ideas about which was the right tree to take home. And so we would have to negotiate between a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old. But then we do have photographs of Dad in under the tree, his butt and boots sticking out because he's in under there cutting it, and the two boys are scrunched down giving Dad guidance along the way.
Well, I love Christmas trees, and they're one of my favorite parts about Christmas. At my dad's house, we have a huge Christmas tree tradition. We got to go out and get it. We buy it. We bring it back. We normally get the biggest one we can find. It can barely fit in the house. And then we do the lights, which has been passed down to me now. It used to be my dad's thing where you have to string out all the lights, put all the lights on there, and then we all have our special ornaments that only we can put on the tree, which is a lot of fun. The cool thing we do that I don't think I've heard anyone else do is every year, to keep the Christmas magic of each tree, we cut off a piece of the old tree and put it in the box. So we put all our old trees from years past into the tree, the current tree. So that's pretty cool. And we do that at my dad's house. At my mom's house, my mom had to marry the most allergic man in the world. And I remember when I was when I was a kid, he was allergic to a Christmas tree. And I was like, who is allergic to a Christmas tree? what is wrong with this guy? But what he did, which is really cool, because he's big into Christmas, and it really upset me. Like, I was just furious. He makes a magical wonderland outside our house. Like, he adds a new thing every year. There's lights everywhere. Everyone knows us on the street is the Christmas house. And this year we had a really cool addition of a Yoda with a Christmas hat on. That was our addition.
Yoda, I like that.
Well, mm-hmm. and for years, I've been in Atlanta for over 30 years. And at some point, I don't remember exactly when it was, but it was probably at least 20 years ago, I discovered this house in Marietta that did major decorating outside. They would start before Thanksgiving, but I always called it the Chia Pet House because they had these little green fuzzy, like a whole choir of animals, and they had, you know, all these different, they had like a carousel set up and then a choir and then all these animals that were playing instruments. But they also, on all of their trees outside the house, they tied these little red ribbons. So they were, you know, ribbons that were a couple of inches that were tied all over the trees. So I have no idea how long it took them to put that together. But it was really such a destination. And unfortunately, they quit. I think they must have sold their house a couple of years ago because they're not there anymore. But it used to really be quite a tradition to go drive by the Chia Pet House. And they would have music playing. And they in the neighborhood, they would have people kind of directing traffic because it was so much traffic coming by their house. And people would stop in front of the house and roll down the window so they could hear the music and see everything. And then they would drive on, and they'd have to go up and turn around so that they didn't create a bottleneck. It was amazing how much people put into, you know, creating those traditions for themselves and their community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, do you remember sitting on Santa's lap at any time, Vanessa?
You know,
preferably as a kid?
I really don't. I think I must have blocked it out. I think I probably was one of those kids that was kind of afraid of Santa.
Oh. You, Stone?
I really don't, but one of Holly's favorite things about Christmas in Atlanta is she observes that our Santa Clauses are real. And what she means by that is they have the real facial hair and they look real, mm-hmm, and they're professional Santas, yeah, whereas apparently wherever she normally went in Philadelphia, they must not have looked the part as much as our Santa Clauses do. And, of course, I actually have sat on Santa Claus's knee recently because he comes to our house on Christmas Eve. And so everybody sits on the knee and, everybody gets pajamas. So
I don't know why when you say Santa from Philly, I imagine this alcoholic guy with a fake beard.
Bad Santa, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, my son now lives in Philly, my younger son, so I will ask
him. Ask him. Is Santa Claus real up there?
Yeah, see what it's like. Well, I grew up in Pennsylvania on the other end of the state, and my hometown had this little park, right, in the center of town or close to the center of town, and Santa's workshop was built there.
Oh, cool.
In the middle of the park. It was awfully small for all the toys he had to create, but I figured Santa's Santa, right?
Yeah, he gets it done every year. So.
Yeah, he got it done. So, but Mom and Dad would, usually it was Dad, he had more patience, would take me down and we'd stand in line in the cold, not inside a store where it's nice and warm.
Oh, wow.
Outside in the cold and get that moment with Santa and get to talk with him.
Well, you know what? I do have an adult story of Santa. A number of years ago, I took an improvisation class that was a workshop, and it was like a 12-week class. And one of the other people in the class was Santa Tom. He's Atlanta's real Santa, and he has the natural hair, the natural beard. And so he was one of the people that took the class. So we had just so much fun having a Santa in our class with us, because you can just imagine, when you're coming up with improv scenes, how you can work Santa into just all kinds of different opportunities. And then because I met Santa Tom through the class and we became friends, my friend Sally and I then did a summer race that was a 4th of July race in Roswell that we called the Roswell Tree. And Business Radio X was actually a sponsor several years. But we raised money for the food bank. But the last, I think it was the last 3 years that we did the Roswell Tree, we had Santa Tom come and be our summer Santa there at the race. And so he was... he was decked out in his summer shorts and his little striped socks, and he would give out little coins that I caught you being good. So
that's great.
Yeah, I stuck with the traditional. I went to the real Santa, the Phipps Santa.
Oh,
that's what
yeah.
I told all my friends too. I was like, I'm going to the real Santa, the Phipps Santa, like the line going across. And I thought that was the real Santa because I always would. Someone would tell me, "Yeah, I was at this other mall." I was like, "That's not the real Santa. your parents are lying to you." So yeah, I was stuck with the Phipps Santa when I was a kid.
Well, let's go with potpourri. Anything.
Well, for anybody that's in Atlanta, there's a great play that plays down in town. I think it's at the Horizon Theater. That's called Sandaland Diaries, and it is one of the funniest shows that you'll see. It's fairly irreverent. So just if you go, be prepared don't take the kids. You might not want to take your clients until you see it, but it's about. It's written by David Sedaris, and the main character is a New York person that's can't find work, and so he takes on a job as a Macy's elf. And so the show is about his experience being a Macy's elf during Christmas in New York at Macy's, and it's very, very funny.
Sounds like a lot of fun. A game you can play with your kids, my dad used to play with me when you're driving them to school, is to who can count the most Christmas lights. I used to really enjoy that as a kid, and it's a fun way to engage your kids. And it was, I always looked forward to it. And we'd always, when you start seeing them pop up, your kids will start doing it. You'll start with 5, 10 will be there, and then there'll be 50. You'll be going back and forth. It's a fun game.
I like that.
Well, I got to tell you, this conversation has really inspired me. I think you may know Dr. Tim, and I might have even made a gift of this book to you. If I haven't, I certainly will, and I'll get you one too, as well, if you want Vanessa and Kevin. But I mentioned that Holly, my wife, is the youngest of 5 girls. her mother gathered a collection of letters that she wrote back home to her family in West Virginia. You mentioned West Virginia earlier. It's entitled Christmas Forever, self-published way back before self-publishing was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just it's a neat book to read if you know anybody in our family and you get to meet some of these sisters. But I think it would be a great idea. I want to get Holly in here and have her read it because she can read in kind of her mother's voice, if you will.
Sure.
And I think it would be neat to have an audio companion.
Oh,
to
that would be
that
sweet.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
That
sounds and cool. I await my copy.
All right. Yeah. I'll have to
I like
it to
that.
You. There's,
like
there's, that. There's this box in the basement that has like the last 50 or 60 copies of this Christmas Forever. And it probably doesn't mean sweet. Anything to most people, but, you know, since I've talked about Holly.
Yeah.
Well, I would be honored to have a copy, especially the last 50 that are around. That's awesome.
But see, that's the kind of thing that I hope this show is triggering for people who are listening is that, you know, this kind of stuff is the stuff of a book to create for the family, not right. necessarily for marketing purposes and retail, but to capture those kinds of things for the family, for the generations to come. Have any of you ever had to celebrate Christmas outside of the country?
You know, I haven't. I've always been in the U.S. I haven't often been with my family since I've been an adult because usually, like I said, I grew up in West Virginia, and I hate the cold weather and I hate the snow, so Thanksgiving's kind of my cutoff. So I usually went up at Thanksgiving, and we celebrated what we called Thanksmas. So we kind of combined everything together. And then I didn't go back for Christmas. So, you know, over the 32 years that I've been in Atlanta, I think I've been home for Christmas maybe 3 times. So, and it was too close to go back for Thanksgiving and for Christmas. But it's wonderful to have, you know, extended family and friends to be able to celebrate holidays with when you're not able to be with your mm-hmm. with your family of birth. You can be with your family of choice.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, throwing out a potpourri, and I mentioned earlier that I love books, and those have been some of my favorite things, and I have often given books as gifts, but Dr. Tim shared a book with me last year that's called Sleeping with Bread, Holding What Gives You Life, and it's just a cool little book that's talking about making a regular practice of talking about the things you're grateful for with the people that are important to you,
mm-hmm.
and I actually bought copies of this book and gave it to a lot of my family members last year for Christmas. So it's fun that you find out about things from other people and then you can share it as well.
Yeah, yeah. And it is a powerful book. I haven't given away too many. I just tell people to go buy it. It is good. You know, I did have the opportunity to celebrate 3 Christmases outside of the U.S. when I lived in Ghana, West Africa. And that was a real experience. And One of the men that became just a mentor and a revered friend, Papa Ansre, said to me, "No, you won't have snow because you're obviously 300 miles north of the equator, and that just isn't going to happen. but what you will notice," he said, "the harmattan." Well, the harmattan comes around November, December, January, and it's a wind that blows across the sub-Sahara desert, and it picks up sand particles and deposits them down on the other part of Africa. And literally, along the end of November, we began to see this mist, which was really dust, which was really sand particles, the harmattan, coming in. And we had a poinsettia bush. Now, you know, in the United States, we see these potted poinsettia. We had one that was 6 foot tall outside of our house. And, I mean, it was all a blossom. And it just... it was an interesting kind of taste of back home. No snow, but sand. And big old poinsettia bushes that were just gorgeous. Well, you know what's happened? The clock is on us. It always happens, doesn't it?
It does always happen.
This has been fun.
Thank you,
Kevin.
It
sure has. Yeah, thanks for inviting me, man.
Well, you know, I have this foolish idea that maybe people who are listening will want to be in touch with us for some reason or other. So, Vanessa, if people want to be in touch with you.
They can get a hold of me at connectforleverage.com, and that's the number 4, so connectforleverage.com.
Stone.
I'll be right here on the other side of the mic at businessradiox.com.
Kevin.
You can reach me at kevin@businessradiox.com.
And I can be reached at our show's website, our email address, whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services, and you can learn more about Right Choice Services and how we help individuals write the book they've always wanted to write at www.write, that's spelled W-R-I-T-E, choiceservices.com. And I hope you'll join us next week and tell your friends about the show. Encourage them to listen live or to the download. Send them an email. Poke them along the way a little bit. Right Here, Right Now, broadcast live every Tuesday morning at 10 Eastern Time, except for on Christmas and New Year's when it falls on a Tuesday. And then you're going to get a show like this that we tape in advance. And you can listen at righthererightnow.businessradiox.com. The MP3 version is available later today. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when Vanessa will probably be at the host. I'm not sure what we've got coming. No, I'm the host the next time.
I think you're the host the next time.
The host next time, all by myself even.
I know.
How about that? Well, join us anyway the next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business right here, right now.